One Man Family, winner of 47 national awards, a Carlton E. Morse creation. One Man's Family, now in its 27th year, is dedicated to the mothers and fathers of the younger generation and to their bewildering offspring. Chapter 20, Book 132 of the Barber Family Saga. Today, Mr. Todd Hunter makes a speech. It's October 24th at 5:56 p.m. in Seacliff, San Francisco. Sometime this evening in the vaulted mid-Victorian banquet room at the Bankers and Brokers Club in downtown San Francisco, Mr. Henry Barber, as the only surviving past president from the original board of directors, will rise to respond to the closing toast. But now, at 5:57, he's standing before his wife's full-length mirror in the master bedroom at the family home, surveying himself dubiously from head to toe. His full-dress suit looks as if it smelled of mothballs. It does not, of course. It's been to the cleaners.
Mr. President, Mr. Vice President, Mr. Secretary, members, guests, ladies and gentlemen, as I come before you tonight, exactly 50 years after my first appearance before this club, I am reminded of a humorous anecdote said to have been a favorite of Abraham Lincoln's.
Claudia and Nicholas are here to drive us downtown, Henry. How do I look?
You look right up to date, but I'm not sure that I do.
Mom, you up here?
Come along, Claudia.
Mrs. Kittleman says Paul's still up in the studio, so I'll run on up. Oh, Dad.
How does this coat look?
I think Mother's dress is scrumptious, don't you?
What about this?
Well, you look very distinguished.
Why are you smiling?
I thought somebody was coming up. Did somebody ring my buzzer?
Excuse me. You knock 'em dead, Dad.
Paul, I wanted to ask you about Joan. May I come up a moment? Joan says she talked to you about this New Mexico idea.
Oh, what New Mexico idea is this?
Oh, let's not bother with that now, Henry. You've got enough on your mind. Now, here's your opera cape.
Yes.
When I came in, I heard you say humorous anecdote.
Yes.
Didn't Jack feel it would be wiser not to label it as humorous, just say, I'm reminded of an anecdote?
Yes, yes, I forgot. I've memorized so many versions, I don't know what's in and what's out.
Dan!
He's up here, Jack. We're almost ready.
He's waiting out in front.
Yes.
Benny and I are leaving now with the girls. We probably won't see you till after the banquet, but I wanted to wish you good luck.
How does the suit look to you?
Well, it looks fine. Perfect for the occasion.
It would have been ridiculous to buy a new dress suit for one banquet.
Hey, Dad.
Yes, Paul.
Hiya, Jack. Well, well.
His suit is 20 years newer than mine.
Everybody looks very sharp.
What perfume is that?
Penelope sent to Iraq for it. I wouldn't dare tell you the name out loud.
A whisper.
Dad, Claudia says she hasn't heard a word about GSR telling.
Nonsense. I told Nicholas the whole thing.
But he didn't tell me. I thought you were the only surviving member of the original board.
I think we'd better go.
I am the only surviving ex-president of the original founding board of directors. They all drank, you know, drank, smoked, overate, and died. Yes. However, when the brochure was sent out, a man we thought was dead, the worst windbag ever elected to the club, but every club makes at least one mistake, and Jessar Todd Hunter was ours. At any rate, we had thought him dead for years. But it turned out that he was living at a hotel for elderly people, the Wissahickony Inn down in Southern California. And so, as if risen from the grave, he too will be there tonight.
Dad, I wanted you to tell her about the order of the speeches. Claudia was here one day when the program chairman was trying to get you.
It was disgraceful. Your father dodged him for weeks.
But why?
They wanted to put Jessar Todd Hunter on the program ahead of me. And I said if they did, the audience would be worn to a frazzle by the time I appeared and wouldn't stand for it.
Good. Then you speak ahead of Mr. Todd Hunter.
Well, that's the point. He doesn't.
What?
I think we'd better go. Nicholas is out in the car and it's chilly tonight.
Fanny, you interrupt.
We can talk in the car.
As I started to say, I finally agreed to allow Mrs. Todd Hunter to speak first. The club is giving him a small bronze plaque, I understand, but I'm to receive a surprise gift of some value. And it would point up the difference too much if I received mine when he receives his. So I'm to close the program. I am the climax, as it were.
Talk about windbag. Here's your top hat, Henry. Let's get started.
That all right?
Oh, wonderful.
Yes, I'll have my manuscript with me and try not to read it. But if I begin turning pages, you'll know I'm in trouble. So, pray.
You'll be fine, Dad.
You'll have them in the aisles.
Here, yes. Mr. President, Mr. Vice President, Mr. Secretary, members of the board. Please.
We'll return in just a moment to One Man's Family.
This is Bill Goodwin. You know, someone once said, humor is the true democracy. That's why we Americans can smile when we tell the stories of the legendary heroes who helped to build our country's great institutions and industries. Take the railroads. There's hardly a worker on them who doesn't know all about the greatest railroad man of them all, John Henry, who weighed 33 pounds at birth and played with a sledgehammer for a toy. When he was 12, John Henry worked in the cotton fields of West Virginia, but he wasn't happy. No, sir, he wanted to help build a new industry which was springing up, the railroad. So he got himself a job, helping to dig the Big Bend Tunnel. Matter of fact, he did most of the work himself, working with a 20-pound hammer in each hand. Then a sharp character came along and tried to sell John Henry's boss a steam drill, which would take the place of 20 men. The boss offered to match John Henry against the drill. If it dug more holes than John Henry did, the boss would buy the drill. But if John Henry won, the boss would get the drill and $500. The match was set up and the race was on. For 6 hours, John Henry made his hammer ring. For 7 hours, eight. It wasn't till the beginning of the ninth hour that he showed any signs of getting tired. At the end of the 9 hours, the race was over. John Henry won and the boss got his $500 and a free drill. All John Henry had to say was, "Before I let that steam drill beat me, I'll die with my hammer in my hand." Who was John Henry? He was the spirit of the men who sweated to bring the railroad to every part of America. Yes, it is a democracy which lets us tell stories of such legendary heroes with a twinkle in our eyes and a chuckle in our throats. And so long as we continue to laugh together as a people, ladies and gentlemen, we will live together as a nation.
It's 1 o'clock in the morning. In the deserted library in the Barber family home, the telephone, which has rung repeatedly every few minutes for the past half hour, once again sets up an insistent ringing. And this time, the front door opens.
Telephone's ringing. Somebody get it.
Jack, you're nearest.
Hiya.
Nicky and I'll go on home.
See you, Marcon.
Wait, Claudia. Don't you want your pan?
Oh, yes. I'll come in. Wait for me, Nicky.
Is somebody going to answer that telephone?
I'm right here.
Close the door, please.
I've got it.
Well, that's it.
I'm waiting for the confusion to die down.
Come along, Claudia.
Oh, excuse me. Dad, cheer up. It wasn't your fault.
Hello? Who? Oh, yeah, hold the phone. It's the city editor of the Chronicle.
I'll not talk to anybody.
Well, who is it, Abe Mellencoff?
Oh, is this Abe Mellencoff? Oh, one moment. Oh, it's his assistant.
Well, let me speak to him.
I'm going to bed. I have nothing to say. Good night. Good
night, Dad. I'm sorry about it.
Good night, Dad.
Yes. Let's never mention it again.
Hello. This is Paul Barber. What did you want to know? Yes, Bankers and Brokers Club. 50th anniversary dinner. Yes, that's right. No, Mr. Barber was the guest of honor, but he never got around to making his speech.
Tell him what happened.
Mr. Jess R. Todhunter preceded Mr. Barber on the program. Now, that's right. Last living members of the original board. Todhunter had been a director 50 years ago, and my father had been president of the club the first year, 1908. Yes, that's right. Well, what happened tonight was this. The toasts and responses were unusually long. Mr. Todhunter rose to speak at 11:05 and spoke from 11:05 to 12:07 when he collapsed. Yes, at the speaker's table. What doctor? Jack, did you...
Fred Thompson.
Oh, yeah. Dr. Fred Thompson was among the two or three doctors in the audience. I'm not sure what hospital they sent him to. Stanford? Oh, there. Oh, yes, nearer, I see. He what? Well, not really. Oh, that's too bad. My father will be deeply sorry to hear it.
Well, Nicky's waiting, and
they're still on the phone.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, Mr. Barber's gone up to bed. I'm sure he would express deepest regret. Mr. Todhunter was a memorable figure in the club for half a century. Well, thank you. No, that's all right. That's what I said. Mr. Barber's speech was never delivered. The party broke up. You're welcome. Good night. Mom, tell Dad.
I'm here on the stairs.
What happened? That sounded ominous.
Jess Todhunter passed away en route to the hospital.
George. I'm sorry for Todhunter. But here, by George. I hope they carry it on the Associated Press. Let this be a warning to banquet speakers the whole world over. Here's an actual case. I feared it at every banquet I've ever attended. But this man actually talked himself to death.
barbers in just a moment. Get the picture. A great many servicemen and women have completed their education while in the armed forces through either USAFI correspondence and self-teaching courses or by group study using USAFI materials. However, in some instances, the completion of courses has suffered due to the absence of qualified teachers. But now USAFI is correcting that difficulty with the establishment of its telecourses. These are courses which have been filmed with outstanding teachers and professors, and which can be taken in addition to the regular USAFI correspondence courses. For example, if you are studying American Government 1, you can study that subject by taking Correspondence Course 475 and the telecourse of the same number. This filmed course and the others are presented in half-hour segments and can be shown on any standard 16mm projector. You will find the courses interesting as well as informative. So see your education officer for details. Then, enroll with USAFI and let a telecourse be your guide. It's 4 o'clock in the morning now, and in the big double bed, two figures lie unnaturally still, each trying not to disturb the other. But now...
Henry?
Yes, haven't closed my eyes. Henry, do you realize I am now the last man, the only one, the sole survivor of the original board of directors of the club? A remnant of another age?
You look just wonderful to me. You were the handsomest man there and the healthiest. Age isn't anything but a state of mind.
Thank you. I think I would have made a good speech if I'd had a chance.
I'm sure you would have.
I wouldn't have used the word humorous, Fanny. No, no. I would have launched right off into the story and got a laugh.
Of course. I didn't have the slightest doubt.
I wonder what gift they were planning to give me. Mr. DuPont said he'd drop in here on Monday. Yes, yes. I suppose they'll give it to me then. Yes? Oh, good night, Fanny. Good night, my dear. Mr. President, Mr. Vice President.
One Man's Family, which comes to you Monday through Friday, is written by Harlan Ware and directed by Carlton E. Morse, and features J. Anthony Smythe, Bernice Berwin, Paige Gilman, Russell Thorson, and Mary Adams. One Man's Family has been selected to be heard by our armed forces overseas through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. In Chapter 21, Book 132, Father Barber receives a gift. Frank Barton speaking. One Man's Family, winner of 47 national awards, now in its 27th year, is a Carlton E. Morse production and comes to you from California.
One Man's Family has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.